scrap, 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 scrap.
I mean, I'm fierce, I'm mad, I'm rude, I got that pro fighter attitude. I'm in the octagon with the podcast on, let's talk about it on Scraptitude. You know I've been the best, grab my belt and begin to flex so wild. I might hit the ref, we got the winner's circle segments and the 2-on-5 takeaways with Tim and Jeff. So just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night, so you know what we have to do. Whether a power punch or a grapple move, you know we got you covered on Scraptitude. So just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night, so you know what we have to do. Whether a power punch or a grapple move, you know we got you covered on Scraptitude, yeah.
Scrap, 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 scrap,
yeah.
Scrap, 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 scrap,
yeah.
Scrap, 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 scrap,
yeah.
Scrap, scrap, scrap,
fight. Howdy, y'all, and welcome to Tim Talk 287, brought to you by the Scraptitude Podcast Network. I am Timothy Lewis, taking you coast to coast, doing the most. Thank y'all for tuning in. Now, for the uninitiated, this podcast combines three key perspectives: that of the odds makers and aggregate, that of the data, courtesy of the Scraptitude Analytics Database, and that of myself, a decade-plus viewer, fan, analyst of the sport, meant to fill in all the gaps in between. Now, this podcast has two key goals. One, to make some motherfucking money. Two, to provide y'all with a comprehensive basis of information so that you, even if you don't align with me, can make the best, most informed wagers come fight night. Before getting down with the UFC 287 coverage, as is customary, we have to review Tim Talk 286. On the night, the odds makers went 1 of 4, with their lone correct prediction being Marvin Vettori defeating Roman Dolezé. By comparison, I went 2 of 4, also calling the Dolezé-Vettori fight correctly, but tacking on Leon Edwards defeating Kamaru Usman, which was also an outcome-specific prediction of a decision victory. The ones I missed on were Gaethje versus Fiziev and Jennifer Maia versus Casey O'Neill. Needless to say, it was a hell of a night for underdogs. And while the results didn't go as well as they could have, if you tailed me on Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman, especially by decision, but just overall, you should have come out okay. Now, looking ahead to UFC 287, we have 5 fights on the slate, up from 4 last event. So without any further hesitation, let's get into UFC 287.
Yo, yeah.
The first bout on the agenda is Kevin Gastelum versus Chris Curtis, recently bumped to the main card. Currently, Kevin Gastelum sits as a minus 131 aggregate favorite to the plus 106 of Chris Curtis. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 56.7% implied likelihood of victory for Gastelum to the 48.5% implied likelihood for Chris the Action Man Curtis. To be frank, I was surprised to see that Kelvin Gastelum comes in at a slight favorite for this bout. I'm trying to parse exactly what it is that the odds makers are thinking. Kelvin Gastelum does have the superior strength of schedule. That's unquestionable. Both his opponent win rate and his average opponent wins substantially outrank that of Chris Curtis, despite the more overall experience of the Action Man, Chris Curtis. So is it that data point, the superior resume, or at least strength of schedule, because many of those tough fights have not been wins for Kelvin Gastelum. Is it that, or is it still him hanging onto the coattails of that performance against Israel Adesanya? It's hard to know. What we can ascertain is that this is a crossroads fight. Kelvin Gastelum is on his aforementioned skid, while Chris Curtis has won 5 out of 6 UFC contests. In my opinion, the winner of this fight is going to be determined by whoever can move forward. Neither man is particularly adept at fighting off the back foot, and both enjoy the majority of their success as the aggressor. To me, that favors the more physically imposing, larger fighter in Chris Curtis, who sports a 100% takedown defense rate at the UFC level. While that's on a small sample size, he does have a stout, strong physique, and it has been an extended time since we've seen Kelvin Gastelum dominate using his wrestling. Furthermore, we recently witnessed Chris Curtis deal with a stout, explosive southpaw in Joaquin Buckley. Extrapolating information from that Buckley versus Curtis fight, I believe we can safely take two conclusions. One, Curtis feels like he's figured out a shorter, explosive southpaw and did so to devastating results. On the other hand, Gastelum can look at that fight and see the superior work rate of Buckley giving Curtis some problems early on. He stacked that first round, and overall, Curtis was not throwing with the volume necessary to win a decision, meaning that Gastelum might be able to replicate the things Buckley did well without getting knocked out. For me, this one is very close stylistically, and both men are quite durable, meaning it's probably going to go to a decision, and a contested decision at that. In such a circumstance as the one I just outlined, I'm going to go with the guy who's won 5 out of his last 6. Gastelum has repeatedly been on the wrong ends of decisions, and to me that signifies that the judges just don't like his body of work over the course of a fight. Case in point, his bouts against Jared Cannonier and Darren Till. So with that, I'm rolling with the action man, Chris Curtis, by decision.
Yo, yeah.
Next up, we have a welterweight clash between Kevin Holland and Santiago Ponzinibbio. Currently, Holland is a minus 247 aggregate favorite to the plus 195 of Ponzinibbio. That converts to a 71.2% implied likelihood of victory for Holland to the 33.9% implied likelihood for the Argentinian dagger, Santiago Ponzinibbio. Let's start this one by taking a look at the strange career arc of Ponzinibbio. To start his UFC career, Santiago Ponzinibbio had a lot of success with wins over Sean Strickland, a knockout against Court McGee and Neil Magny, another victory over Mike Perry and Gunnar Nelson, all valued names in this UFC welterweight division. And just as he was getting warmed up, really priming himself for a title run in the prime of his career, tragedy strikes. He gets an infection, some kind of weird illness, and he's gone from November 2018 until January 2021. Since that return, Ponzinibbio has gone 2-3, with two of those losses coming by split decision to Jeff Neal and Michel Pereira. At 36 years old, the Argentinian dagger still has his eyes on one last run. Unfortunately, he is now confronted from a stylistically challenging adversary. Kevin Holland is a 6'3", hard-hitting, and experienced welterweight. Not only will he have the speed advantage, but he maintains a superior significant strike differential per round of 5.5 to the 1.85 of Ponzinibbio. Now, traditionally, Ponzinibbio has bridged that gap through his power. He has a 1.14% knockdown rate. That is 1.14 knockdowns per every 100 significant strikes landed. He cracks, and if you look at his UFC resume, he has 10-plus knockdowns throughout his UFC tenure. The issue with relying on that power is twofold. First, Kevin Holland is a durable motherfucker. Second, Kevin Holland is pretty damn elusive, using that height and speed to dip out of range of shots and snipe his opponents coming in. For my eyes, the way this fight plays out is clear. Ponzinibbio tries to chop away with calf kicks to deal with the range. Kevin Holland makes adjustments and hits him with sniper-like accuracy. Ponzinibbio is a tough dude, but I have a hard time seeing this one go to a decision. I have Kevin Holland taking it inside the distance.
Yo, yeah.
Next, we have Rob Font taking on fan favorite Adrian Yanez. Currently, Font sits at a plus 151 underdog to the minus 186 aggregate favorite that is Adrian Yanez. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 39.8% implied likelihood of victory for Font to the 65% implied likelihood for Yanez. Fans of Adrian Yanez have been awaiting his opportunity to crack into the top 15 or be matched up with somebody with a number next to their name. That comes in the form of Rob Font. And nonetheless, Adrian Yanez is a significant favorite. Does that come as a surprise? Not really. Rob Font's last two fights came against Jose Aldo and Chito Vera, two patient strikers who were able to wait their moment and capitalize on counter-striking opportunities, hurting and nearly finishing Rob Font. Now he takes on a talented boxer and skillful counterpuncher in Adrian Yanez. Putting two and two together, we see how, theoretically, Adrian Yanez could exploit the vulnerabilities put on display by Jose Aldo and Marlon Vera. However, is it not a little presumptuous to lump Adrian Yanez, a fringe top 15 fighter at this juncture, with names like Aldo and Vera? Yes, his brand of pugilism is aesthetically pleasing, but let's take a look at the numbers. Who has he fought? Currently, Adrian Yanez's opponents have an average number of wins of just 6.5 to the 12.4 of Rob Font. Their win rate? Just 63% compared to the substantial 78% opponent win rate of Rob Font. It's not just how do you execute, but who have you executed against? In his bout with Davy Grant, a high-volume, cagey veteran with a crafty strike selection, we did see moments of struggle from Adrian Yanez. Yes, he came out of that fight looking clean, but he was in a tough affair. Grant was repeatedly able to chop the calf, and when he threw straight strikes, they landed efficiently. Lastly, as the fight went on, Davy Grant made the adjustment of just throwing one or two strikes to multi-strike combinations. This took advantage of the casual to borderline lethargic resets of Adrian Yanez and allowed Grant to land meaningful strikes. While I had Yanez winning that fight 2-1, it did provide yet unseen insights into the vulnerabilities of Adrian Yanez. It's not that long ago that Rob Font was the guy looking to break into the upper echelon of the division, whose name was on the tips of people's tongues, who then got exposed once he had to fight guys that really cut their teeth at that level. So for me, we see an obvious path to victory for Adrian Yanez. He utilizes his slick boxing, his counterpunching, and he repeatedly hurts Rob Font, thereby stealing rounds or maybe even getting him out of there early. Although to me, that's unlikely considering the long period of durability we've seen, at least in terms of not being finished by knockout for Rob Font. But for Rob Font, there's also a very obvious avenue to victory. Borrowing from the first round of Randy Costa's fight against Adrian Yanez, we saw a high-output approach with a stiff jab give Yanez problems, bloodying up his nose. Rob Font has one of the best jabs in the division. He's also a competent calf kicker, a technique we saw the aforementioned Davy Grant utilize successfully. Interestingly, my biggest concern with Font isn't what happened in his bouts with Aldo and Vera. It's more so his age at 35 years old, turning 36 in June. Are we seeing an age-related decline? Because if not, we could see Adrian Yanez running into a buzzsaw being the most prolific volume striker in this division. I like Yanez a lot as a fighter, as a prospect, but for me, this bout feels like a situation where you either pick the underdog or you stay away from it altogether. But I'm going to get a little audacious here. I'm rolling with Rob Font outright. Although if you want to get outcome specific, his overwhelming likelihood of victory is by decision.
Yo, yeah.
Next, we have the co-main event of the evening, Gilbert Burns taking on Jorge Masvidal. Currently, Burns sits as a staggering -484 aggregate favorite to the +340 underdog of Jorge Masvidal. In terms of percentages, that converts to an 82.9% implied likelihood of victory for Burns to the 22.7% implied likelihood for Masvidal. Personally, I don't see a lot of room for dissection here. We know what this is. It's two elder statesmen of this division trying to prove that they're still contenders. They have clearly defined strengths and limitations. To me, the main difference is that Jorge Masvidal is 2 years older, 2 years further past the age apex, 2 years steeper into his decline. A few years ago, this fight is interesting. Masvidal, a springy, athletic fighter who's impossible to keep down, leveraging his Muay Thai against a dangerous and well-rounded Gilbert Burns. Today, however, April 6th, 2023, Jorge Masvidal is not the same guy. While his losses have been to extremely strong competition in both Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington, to me, visually, Jorge Masvidal has looked like a decrepit version of himself, no longer able to avoid strikes in narrow margins or scramble his way through rapid grappling sequences. I do not see that same decline from Gilbert Burns, who has aged somewhat gracefully as he eclipsed that 35-year-old mark. I think he's able to land enough in the striking exchanges and complement it with timely takedowns on his way to a unanimous decision victory.
Yo, yeah.
Last up, we have the main event of the evening, the quadrilogy between Alex Pereira and Israel Adesanya. Currently, the champion Alex Pereira sits at a plus 111 underdog to the minus 138 favorite of Israel Adesanya. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 47.4% implied likelihood of victory for Pereira to the 58% implied likelihood of Israel Adesanya. Now, before we get into the fight breakdown, there's one thing I want you to pay close attention to, and that is the weight cut of Alex Pereira. We know he cuts a ton to get down to 185. I mean, just look at the man. But he's getting older. While he hasn't shown any issues so far in his UFC tenure, that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. If he has a particularly rough cut, it dramatically shifts the scope of how this fight will play out. Getting into the matchup analysis, we know the background here. Two fights in kickboxing, Pereira won both of them, once by knockout and once by a hotly contested decision. Then they met in the UFC as Alex Pereira challenged for Israel Adesanya's throne, taking his title by way of fifth round TKO victory. With all of that in mind, it is astonishing that Israel Adesanya remains a favorite for the fourth bout. Yes, we can take bits and pieces of each fight and chain them together to show a comprehensive view of Israel Adesanya being a better fighter on a technique-for-technique, moment-for-moment level. But the end result has always been the same. Alex Pereira wins the moments that matter most, the biggest. He's the bigger, stronger, more powerful man. And on top of that, he's arguably just as technically proficient in Israel Adesanya's strongest skill set, his distance striking. He is that laboratory, prototype, nightmare, boogeyman kind of matchup for Adesanya. No two ways about it. However, in my opinion, it's a little disingenuous to take all three fights and use it against Israel Adesanya. Does it matter? It does. But this is mixed martial arts, and they only have one bout in that context. Alex Pereira won by knockout, but Israel Adesanya was up 3-1 at the time of being knocked out. In that first bout, we saw Adesanya mix in all of the wrinkles we could hope for. The framing with that lead jab into the right hand that rocked Pereira in the first round. And then later, implementing some grappling and dominating from top position, landing forceful ground-and-pound strikes. So once again, needing to be the guy who's making the adjustments, what does Adesanya do? How does he build upon his success in that last fight? First of all, I think he needs to get aggressive. He talks about butchering Pereira this time around. Well, if he's going to take full advantage of his speed, he needs to do so while being an attacker, not just a defender circling off of the fence, hoping not to get clipped. The other thing he can try to exploit further is his supposed advantage when it comes to wrestling. Adesanya has been training longer as a grappler, and it wouldn't be an all-out surprise for him to lean into that type of stylistic approach. In my opinion, these are both risky gambits, but Adesanya has to take risks if he's going to get a different result. When sizing up this fight, it's clear to me that Israel Adesanya can win. We can patch together all different examples of success he's had, and then extrapolate that over the course of a 5-round fight, or however many rounds it would take for him to potentially finish Alex Pereira. But the thing is, you have to do just that. It's patchwork. You don't have an example of him actually getting over the hump. So while we know he can hurt Pereira and he can outpoint him, we have to acknowledge that Pereira can hurt him worse. And also that if we do some patchwork for that first fight, take away that last second rocking of Pereira by Adesanya in the first round, all of a sudden it's like, okay, Pereira won round one. He won round two. And then he won round five. If it wasn't a knockout, he's getting the 3-2 decision in that fight. So as we can see here, the UFC did its job in making a compelling fight. And the odds makers aren't quite sure what to do with the relative mixed martial arts experience of Adesanya compared to Pereira when measuring it against Pereira's track record of success against Adesanya. In our analysis, we can draw all kinds of narratives or piece together different angles of evidence, but I don't want to overcomplicate things. So at the risk of oversimplifying, I'm going with the guy who's won three times to win a fourth time. I'm taking Alex Pereira by decision.
Yo, yeah.
So that about does it for this pod. No parlay of the pod this time. I took a look at things, just didn't see something I liked. And after not hitting the parlay a couple weeks in a row, I'm not here to give bad betting advice. But I do hope that I provide you with the comprehensive base of information that allows you to feel more confident when placing your wagers come fight night. Other than that, please take the time to subscribe, rate, and review this program, and refer us to a friend. We very much appreciate your listenership. Until next time, good luck this weekend, happy Easter, and enjoy the fights. Scrap.